Hey, ladies and gentlemen, here we are back again with Hell Day. Is it Tuesday? It's Tuesday. Thought we'd do a live stream today just because, like I said, we did a live stream of the regular episode, so that normally go up on Tuesday, but you know how that's going. We probably are going to end up, I mean, from this point forward, are you just going to want to do every single episode as a live stream, like the main episodes?
I'm looking at the link to this, and it doesn't say it's live.
Oh, well, it says
okay, live. It's there now. It's there now. All right.
Yeah. It's like, guys, I just realized we were recording. We were recording a show earlier today, and I was watching it back, and I was like, the same shirt on. So we have the same shirt on.
We did?
Yeah.
Oh, look. Yeah, we did. We got so many of this stuff. We got so much of this stuff.
Well, I didn't notice. It's like, you know what I mean? I got up early and left the room, and I didn't know what you were wearing today. All right. So what we're going to do today, maybe give a little, because we did an hour yesterday, but I guess we'll just do a brief little thing of new Netflix horror series, Ju-on Origins, because somebody asked us about that, I think yesterday or the day before, and I said I would look into, if I had time to stream it, like to binge watch the whole thing, that I would end up reviewing it today, and I did, because it wasn't as long as I thought it was.
Yeah.
So I actually just sat down and watched it last night. It's 6 episodes, 28 minutes long, so it's a little less than 3 hours time investment. Now, Tom's going to say right off the bat,
you know what I'm going to say.
Let's just get that out of the way, right?
It's good quality, you know, the way it's shot. And I guess the acting is good, but it's Japanese horror. I'm not big into it.
You would definitely have to be into, and I'm not saying that you necessarily have to be into the Grudge franchise, although it does help. I think what they did with this one, you know what the funny thing is? Okay, so I've seen the original Ju-on, the Japanese one, which is very good. I've seen the remake, the American remake, which I think came out in 2004, I want to say, or 2006, with Sarah Michelle Gellar. That was also pretty decent. And then I had forgotten, but just last year, I think like that, we went to the theater and saw the reboot Grudge, which kind of, I mean, I remember it not being terrible, but the fact that I even forgot that I had seen it is probably like not a really good sign.
So, there's something about Japanese horror. It's based in ambience, a lot of it. And I just think it lacks texture. Every fucking frame looks the same. You know what I'm talking about?
This one is very much in line with the Grudge mythology. Now, the thing about it is that there have been, I believe, 4 American movies made of the Grudge, but in Asia, it's a whole fucking franchise. I think there was like 12 or 13 movies. There was a video game. There was even like a Grudge Ring crossover, like with the two villains, like the two girl villains in there, like fighting each other, which I haven't seen. What this one did, this one, it seemed like, it was, I guess because the American remake that they did recently, like last year, you know, didn't do so well and got really like critically panned, was that they wanted to take it in a different direction. Like, so what they did with this one, which I thought was actually a pretty good idea, was they took the mythology of the idea of the movies being like, you know, a curse that comes from a quote unquote grudge, like something terrible happened in the house. And then everybody who comes in contact with the house is like now cursed going forward. And like, you can never get away from it and stuff. So they took that. But from what I could understand, in the universe of the series, the Grudge movies exist, but they are a fictionalization of stuff, love the real stuff that happened in the series. You know what I'm saying? So they're almost kind of like going back a level and get like going meta and saying, you know, yeah, the movies exist. They were made in this universe, but they were, you know, just based off of the real shit that we're going to tell you about right now, which I thought was kind of like an interesting take on it. So this is not, I saw like a lot of reviews saying that this was like a prequel, and you would think that because it was called Ju-on Origins. It's not exactly a prequel in the sense that it doesn't, you know, lead up to the events that happened in the first Grudge movie. Now, I think the first Grudge movie, I think it was a short film, and I think that came out in 1998, and then the main film came out in 2002, I want to say. So this does happen before that, like in the Grudge's timeline, but it doesn't directly lead up to it. Now, I don't know if there's going to be a second season of this. It wouldn't surprise me if there was, because they did leave a lot of stuff hanging, and you know, they left a lot of questions unanswered, and so you could tell that they were kind of wanting to go farther with it. So we'll see if they do or not. Now, one thing I will say, I don't think that you would have needed to see the Grudge movies to watch this, but it does help, because at least you know what the whole premise of it is. But since it's not directly tied into it, I don't think it's as important. But one thing I will say, and that a lot of Asian horror has this, a lot of Japanese horror has this, where, and I think we've talked about this before, maybe we talked about it when we were reviewing The Ring and the American remake of it, was that Japanese horror movies tend to be more episodic or more cyclical, you know, whereas Western storytelling tends to be much more like, you know, like rising action, falling action, like, you know, looks more like a parabola, where I feel like Asian storytelling is more circular or more episodic. Now, that's kind of what you're getting with this. And I will say that even though the episodes are short, like I said, there's only 6 episodes and they're only about 27, 28 minutes long each. When it first starts out, they're kind of coming at you from like 4 different timelines or like 4 different characters. And you're not entirely sure at first, like how they're going to relate to one another. Like, you know that it's all going to relate to this house and this curse and whatever it was that happened, but there, you know, it takes a while for it to kind of get in the groove and like you figure out like how all these characters like relate to one another. You know what I'm saying? So I will say that you kind of have, if you really want to watch it, if you're really into this kind of thing, that you kind of have to be patient, because even I at first was just kind of like, well, you know, what does this have to do with that thing? Because it seemed like a couple of things and it seemed kind of scattered at first. And like, I wasn't really sure like how it was all going to get tied together. But then as it went on, the thing about this one too, is that this is one where you definitely, definitely are going to have to, like, if you're going to watch it, you definitely are going to have to pay attention, because like I said, there's at least 4 timelines going on. It goes back and forth in time. It starts in 1988 and then like it jumps ahead to 1994 and then it jumps ahead to 1997. And there's also like flashbacks, and a lot of the characters and the houses and stuff like that are related to one another in certain ways. And so you really have to like keep track, which was kind of hard for me to do. So this is one, if you liked it the first time, you probably are going to have to watch it again, like to catch all of the shit that happened in it.
And if it's hard for her to do, then that means impossible for me to do. Impossible. I can't keep track of all that jumping around. I hate that shit.
Yeah, he likes very linear.
Yeah, I can't stand it.
I mean, so this one, I mean, it stayed mostly like within each episode. It usually stayed within the same year, but it went back and forth between different character situations and shit that was like happening like simultaneously. And then like in the next episode, it would skip ahead. But then sometimes it would go back too, like it would do flashbacks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? One thing that I did like that they did with this, they did this a little bit in that kind of crappy or forgettable movie that they made last year too, was that
I forgot all about seeing that movie.
I forgot.
We saw it in the theater.
Yeah, we did. It was because, yeah, we were seeing all the horror movies. It's like, I remember it not being terrible, but the fact that I didn't even remember it.
It's not any good.
It didn't make a fucking impression.
And, you know, and what language it's in doesn't matter, because we saw Parasite. It was a Korean flick. I remember that movie well.
Well, everybody remembers that movie, because that movie was fucking awesome.
Yeah, that's a good movie, yeah.
But yeah, so it's kind of a thing where, like I said, I don't know if this is going to have a second season. I feel like it kind of needs one. Now, what this did, interestingly, like I said, they seemed like they were trying to reboot, not reboot necessarily, but they were kind of trying to go like a little bit off the beaten track from what like the movies were, because the movies were based very much on, you know, the ghost woman and the little boy that, you know, with the cat and the noise and all that kind of stuff, and jump scares and that kind of stuff. So it seemed like on this one, they were kind of trying to ground it a little bit more. There's no jump scares. The ghosts are not super scary, but they focus a lot more on like the psychological stuff and like the actual crimes and the actual abuse and stuff like that that caused the grudge in the first place. So I will say that
COVID.
Yeah, we did. I might very well. I'm not sure. I mean, I haven't really went anywhere other than Publix, and I had a mask on. But
it's just damn pollen.
It might be, yeah, because the pollen's really bad this year. But so it's kind of a case where it's, you know, whereas the movies focus more on like spooky, you know, jump scare type of stuff, this one focuses a lot more on kind of like the human stories. And I will say that I was actually, because it starts out pretty slow and it starts out like with pretty more psychological kind of stuff. There's like one guy who's like a paranormal investigator, and it kind of starts out with him. And then there's an actress, and she's like been hearing like creepy kid footsteps in her house. And she goes to him for help and finds out that the boyfriend has been in the cursed house and she doesn't know where it is. So they're trying to find out where this house is because nobody knows. And then there's all these other like interlocking stories. Look at this student and stuff. But you quickly get into a thing where I think it was only like the second episode where there starts to be like some really like shocking scenes of violence. They're spaced out, but you know, there'll be a thing where it's like everybody's just kind of like talking or like talking about the haunted house or whatever. And then all of a sudden you have like a dude with a kid in a car, like beating the shit out of a kid, or, you know, the one student, Kiyumi, I think her name is, who gets like dragged to the cursed house. Two of her schoolmates like hold her down and like this guy rapes her. And like, so, and then as it goes on, it gets like more and more like graphic. So I'm going to say that if you're real squeamish, you can probably like stomach the first couple episodes, but there's moments in the later ones where, I mean, spoiler alert, there's shit like, a woman getting a baby, like a fetus cut out of her pregnant belly and like a phone stuffed in there. You know, there, so there's shit like that. There's a lot of rape. There's a lot of like domestic abuse, like dudes beating the shit out of women, dudes beating the shit out of kids.
It's Japanese. Japanese horror does that kind of
shit. Yeah, stuff like that. So I guess I wasn't really, because I had seen The Grudge and I'd seen stuff like that. It's, you know, the movie, the mythology, the movie does have that at its heart, because that's kind of what caused the, you know, the original Grudge in the movie was, you know, this abuse of this woman and this child. So that has always been in the background in the mythology, but I guess I wasn't expecting, like, I wasn't offended by it or anything, but I wasn't expecting them to like show it to the extent that they showed it.
That's probably the strong point of the movie though.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because I definitely think so too. And I think it was good that they spaced it out and did less of like a ghosty jump scary thing and more like a human horror drama type of thing.
My problem with it is the writing style. Like I said, it's jumping around everywhere, slow starts. It's just not something for a person like me with a short attention span. I got to, you know what I mean? I got a low tolerance for that kind of stuff. I got to ask Jenny, you know, when they do a flashback, Jenny, is this a flashback? She'll tell you.
Yeah.
If the story isn't linear, I'm fucking lost. I'm like, why are they jumping back? I get pissed.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of reasons that they do it. It's like, I know in some movies they do it just for the sake of it.
Yeah.
But in a lot of movies, they do it for a specific purpose.
Yeah.
In this one, I thought they did.
I'm just not really used to.
They did kind of an interesting thing in this one. And I kind of hope if it has a second season, I kind of hope that they do a little bit more than this. But I liked the idea. They didn't really go super into it. But the fact that this cursed house was almost serving as like the fulcrum of this, almost like a time loop, because stuff was like repeating itself. Because there was like some really cool shit with like, there was this really, one of the creepiest images in it, which was like this weird shadow woman that had actual eyes, and it was like really kind of creepy. And somebody saw it like outside of the window, like in 1952. And then as the story goes on, you see that that was an actual person later who was trying to get into the house like in 1988 or 1994 or whenever it was, like in one of the other timelines. So the fact that they like overlapped all the timelines, you know, kind of, like I said, this house was almost kind of like the center of this, you know, spreading disease, I guess, or like this kind of curse that was like had all of these spokes coming out of it, and that it was like happening at all times, like in all timelines. I thought that was a really neat idea. And so I kind of hope that they do a little bit more with that, because that seemed a little bit underdeveloped. But I don't know if they're going to get more into that, like as, you know, as the series goes on, or if it goes on like in a second one, because like I said, they left a lot of shit hanging. Like, I don't really want to spoil all the shit, but you know, the paranormal investigator character who's not in every single episode, but he's kind of the guy you start with, and he's kind of like the through line, like through the whole story. There's some shit with him and the house and like why he escaped the curse. And, you know, is there a reason for it? I mean, there's got to be a reason for it because they bring it up more than once, but they don't really tell you what that is.
I'm sure there's going to be more.
I feel like they'll probably like finish that up. Now, like I said, if you're not into Asian horror and are not used to this type of storytelling, which, like I said, a lot of Japanese movies actually do have this kind of structure, then I would probably advise against watching it. But if you're really into Japanese horror, you are kind of like ready for something that kind of like jumps all over the place. And that maybe, like I said, it seemed a little scattershot, you know, because some of the characters, there was like a serial killer type character who was only in like one or two episodes, like in a couple of scenes. And I thought that he was going to be more significant. So I don't know if that dude's going to be like a bigger character moving forward, or, you know, if they just put it in there and they forgot about him. I'm not really sure like what that was doing. I did like also that they did kind of like almost like a macrocosm type of thing, because every year that they went to, like in 1988, they were talking about Chernobyl from a couple years before. You know, there was like all these bad earthquakes that had happened in Tokyo, like in, you know, whatever particular year, like 1994. So it's kind of like they were kind of saying like how this smaller like domestic type of horror like that happened in this particular house and caused this curse was also like mirrored like in the larger world, which I thought was kind of like a neat thing. But like I said, I feel like it needed a little bit more, like those ideas I think needed a little bit more fleshing out, which may happen later on. I mean, it's hard to say because it's a series and because this is only the first season of it. So I'm not sure if they're going to continue these particular threads or if it was just kind of like they weren't even really thinking about it. But yeah, if you don't like if you're into shit that goes back and forth in time and that you really, really have to pay attention, this is definitely not one that you can just watch casually, like, and just be doing other shit and not really paying attention. Because if you're not paying attention to like every single thing, then none of it is going to make a goddamn bit of sense. Because like I said, it's the same characters through many years, and then there's shit going back with this dude is that this house and like this timeline and that timeline. So it's like, if you're not prepared to do that, I can see how it would kind of get on your nerves.
Yeah.
But I didn't love it, but I thought it was pretty decent, and it was a lot better than that movie that we saw that I totally forgot about.
as far as new series though, it wasn't as good as say like Blood Machines.
Well, no.
Yeah, I like Blood Machines better.
Although, like I said, I think that's really, it's really interesting how they're doing different stuff. Like they're kind of stretching the definition of series, I guess, because that one was another one that was just kind of like, it was just three episodes, but they were really short.
Right.
So
it worked
like,
though.
Yeah, it did. Cause yeah, weren't they, cause I think those,
was there only three series?
There was three episodes.
Yeah, they were only about 15 minutes each, I think, weren't they?
Yeah, because I think the whole thing ended up being only like an hour long or something. Yeah. I think they were 20 minutes, like each episode.
It was almost kind of like music videos in a way. Weird.
Yeah.
A bunch of really interesting ideas. I wanted more of that.
I'm kind of hoping they make some more of that. Yeah. I mean, and this one was kind of the same, because it's like this one, you know, yes, it's a series in the sense that it's six episodes, but the episodes are so short that really this could just be like a long movie, like a 3-hour movie.
Yeah.
And like I said, I feel like they're, and despite that, even though it seemed like a 3-hour movie, it seemed like there was a lot more development they could do. Maybe it was just because they had so many characters and so many timelines that they didn't really have a lot of time to focus on any one in particular. And they were just kind of focused more on the relationships, how they overlapped with each other and how this house like impacted like all of these different lives. Like I said, like the spokes of a wheel kind of, but I do kind of wish they had done a little bit more with the characterization, maybe like, you know, pared down the cast a little bit. Like I said, the serial killer character, unless he's going to come into play later on, I didn't get, because, you know, he was like in the first episode. And then like, I thought that was going to be like a, like kind of a massive, like plot thread, like going forward. And then it almost seemed like they kind of forgot about it. So I don't really know if that was on purpose or if they had some like grand plan or something like that.
All right. Mango's talking. Yeah. The, Blood Machines is on
Shudder.
Shudder.
Yeah.
It should be on there for free. Yeah. You want to see that one. You know,
that's, like I said, you don't even need to, like, it's cool to, like, you know, watch, like, for the story and stuff, but it's like you don't even need, like, the dialogue or anything. You can just sit there and look at it.
It's very much
it's amazing, like, looking.
If you were a kid and you ever read Heavy Metal magazine,
yeah,
there's a bunch of little cartoons and stuff, animated sci-fi slash horror called Heavy Metal. It's like something out of Heavy Metal.
Yeah,
pretty good. I mean, it just drops you right into this totally different universe with a bunch of weird shit happening. Very unique science fiction type ideas. Really stylish. Really, really visually stylish.
Yeah, it's like it was just ultimate, like, it was like a visual orgasm.
Yeah, and it's low budget. Low budget acting, but it fucking works. It's like, imagine like a super high caliber Star Crash movie, but the writing's good.
It did kind of give me a little bit of that time. Yeah.
And it's like it's being a B movie, like a super high quality B movie on purpose. Like, that's the tone they wanted.
Yeah.
And it was just fucking good, man. And it kind of brought me back to seeing Star Wars, the first Star Wars, like A New Hope, for the first time when I was a kid. It brought me back to that. It was like I was seeing a new type of science fiction.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a whole new genre of it. And you're like, wow, it's kind of taking you back to like a Flash Gordon, fucking Buck Rogers, fucking.
But Star a modern, Wars, a modern like a take on
super
it.
Super modern take on it. Yeah. I mean,
but visually, it was still kind of throwback. Yeah.
Visually stunning.
Like it was gorgeous.
The colors were all wrong. Fucking the way the movie's edited, the acting's kind of fucking stilted. It's the storyline is fucking weird. You got ray guns, but they don't act like ray guns you've ever seen before in a movie. You just got to see it. It's fucking totally unique.
I mean, because like the thing about it, you know, like what you were saying with the acting was because the whole project was so stylized that it almost seemed like, well, that was a deliberate choice because everything else was stylized too.
Yeah, the actors have accents that don't really fit the character. The fucking acting's kind of strange. It's just, and the edit's weird. It's just, it's a work of art.
Yeah.
You can.
But it works.
It works.
With the whole thing.
Works 100%.
Because it just kind of came a lot. Oh, thank you very much, Mango.
See some flash balls.
The bad day flash
ball. It looks super, super expensive. But it's weird how that's kind of fucking juxtaposed. I can't fucking
get old. Juxtaposed.
Juxtaposed.
He's not even drunk. It's like the middle of the day.
Where it's kind of offset by this strange acting and this kind of storyline that a real expensive movie would never have a storyline like that.
Yeah.
It's just fucking really, really cool. Really cool. Like something. Okay. Here's a good example. It kind of reminded me of a super high quality Riddick movie. Kind of. Yeah. But weirder. Much weirder than Riddick. But
yeah.
Riddick kind of gave me some good vibes sometimes, you know, where Riddick kind of did its own thing, you know. But it's kind of like that, but visually you'll see it's just fucking weird, man. Really weird.
Yeah. Mango Badger was commenting and I guess he's talking about Ju-on Origins, where he's talking about that rape scene and the storyline that went with it was odd. I thought that was a little bit odd too. Like one thing, the rape scene, like kind of like, I was like, oh, we're going here. Okay. That's kind of upsetting. But so that went that way. But then I didn't really get, and you know, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched it or anything, I didn't really get that after that happened to her, and she was clearly very traumatized and everything, but then she like goes and like willingly like has sex with the rapist, or like wants to go home with the rapist. Did the house possess her? I kind of feel like that's probably what had happened, because then at that point, like she goes and makes him do that thing with her mom and all that other stuff. So yeah. So I didn't really, I guess this is another one where I'd have to like watch it again because maybe I missed it, but I'm not really sure like what effect that, because it seemed to have like a little bit a different effect on different people, like, you know, in the, you know, that went in the house, because it did affect everyone that went in the house. Just, it seemed to do it in different ways, almost like in a possession type of way, but it manifested itself differently, like in every single person. Like some people would just like see the ghost and like freak out and die of like, you know, a heart attack or whatever. And then some people seemed like they got possessed and then got murderous, you know, and would go and murder people and stuff. So, you know, I don't, like I said, I haven't seen, other than the first Grudge movie and the American remake, that's like the only, pretty much the only one I've seen, you know, the one that came out last year, that was like the only one. So I know like the rough mythology, but I didn't really know like what all the rules of it were, I guess, necessarily. But I wanted to talk a little bit too about, Netflix and horror series, because really, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like they haven't had a really, really good horror series since Haunting of Hill House, which was 2018. Kingdom was good, although I don't know if I'd call that necessarily a horror series. I guess it is in the sense that it was zombies, but it was kind of more a historical drama that happened to have zombies in it.
Yeah, and it was Korean, so it wasn't an American series.
Right.
So that was actually more made for that market. This market hasn't had one, really, a good one since Walking Dead. And Walking Dead really hasn't been good in a long while.
Well, I'm talking about Netflix horror series.
Yeah, well, that's on Netflix, but that's not a Netflix series, right? Okay.
All right. Well, Haunting of Hill House was amazing, and so I'm kind of like, I'm really excited because Mike Flanagan, who did Haunting of Hill House, he's doing Haunting of Bly Manor, which is coming out next week, which was like season two, but not really, because it's going to be based on Turn of the Screw, which, like I said, it's got to be like a million times better than The Turning, which we saw last January, which was also kind of awful.
Yeah.
Which was kind of a shame because it seemed like it was good until the end.
Yeah.
Like if they hadn't ended it like that, it would have been a perfectly passable movie. But the ending of it was just like, nope, here, let us kick you in the nuts. Bye.
Yeah, those some of those movies we were seeing at AMC were quite disappointing. Really, the best fucking horror movie that we've seen recently was that horror sci-fi movie, Vivarium. I liked that movie.
I loved that movie.
That was a really
I love movie. Fucking mind-fucky movies.
That was the Predator 1 of alien fucking Parasite movies.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
But in a totally different
way. Parasite doesn't kill you the same way as a hunter does.
Yeah.
But that's how I imagined that movie. That was a fucking good movie. And it was still a lot of mystery to that movie. Remember the weird writing?
That's what I liked. I really liked I love unsettling shit like that. Like I love gore too. Like I'm into gore and everything as much as the next person. And I love like horror comedies and stuff. But if you can make a movie that's just like really weird and just really unsettling, it just has like these really, really creepy like imagery. If you know, and it's hard to pull off, but if you can do that.
I thought it was kind of a joke at first, and then it goes on. I go, no, man, it's just fucking horrible. and you know what I mean? It's a good flick. It has the same guy in it that was from Art of Self-Defense. He's in it.
Yeah.
What's that guy's name?
Oh, shit.
You remember his name?
I do, okay. But it just went right out of my head.
And he came out with two movies in a row.
Jesse Eisenberg?
Maybe? I think so. He came out with two movies in a row that fucking blew me away. Art of Self-Defense and Vivarium.
He was in that movie about Facebook, too. The social network.
I didn't see it.
Playing Mark Zuckerberg.
But if you guys haven't seen those, see those two. But Vivarium is a horror movie.
And if you like weird flicks, that's like a really good one.
And fucking Art of Self-Defense is a fucking badass movie about fucking an evil kung fu dojo. Very much kind of like something out of fucking Count Dante.
Yeah. Oh, somebody said, Mango Badger says, The Invisible Man that had Elizabeth Moss in it. That was that was a great movie.
Yeah, it was okay.
And Underwater was good too.
Yeah. For some reason, people were shitting all over Underwater. And I liked Underwater.
I did too. I liked it a lot.
It was survival horror. Some people didn't like the story because, well, not much happened. They just did, you know, so what? It had good special effects. It was kind of like Alien 1, but underwater. And a big surprise.
I mean, Alien 1 was slow by today's standards, too.
That's right.
That's, I don't know. I feel like there's kind of a faction of horror fans that, not naming any names or anything, but it's like some of them, it's like, it seems like there has to be something happening like every fucking second.
And the story has to be complicated and convoluted. It was a simple fucking story, very classic sci-fi horror, like Alien 1. Alien 1 is the same story almost.
That's pretty much. I think that was really the kind of the main criticism that I saw of Underwater was that, it's basically just like an alien ripoff, which I don't know if it was so much a ripoff. It was just an homage. And that, you know, it's when you do just like a survival story like that, it's like, you know, whether you're ripping something off, it's like there's only so much you can do with a story like that.
And the movie looked great. It did.
I thought it looked really cool.
We saw it on the big screen.
Yeah, we saw it a couple times.
It's bombing hard, but you can get that off of Xbox One for like $4.
Yeah.
And I recommend that one. Get that one in HD.
Yeah. I liked that one a lot.
It was good. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you know, I'm, And there's a fine line between, because I mean, everybody knows that watches this show all the time. I'm a big fan of, like, you know, arty horror, elevated horror. I like all that A24 stuff. And I know some people don't like that. It's not everybody's cup of tea. Not all of them are great, but I like to get immersed in a horror film. I want to, like, you know, feel what this person is feeling. I want to feel like what would I feel like in that situation. And I feel like if you're just going at this breakneck speed, you know, just trying to get to the next thing or trying to get to the next gore gag or whatever, that's, you can't really get invested in the characters. You can't really get, you know, you're not upset when they die. You don't do this, that, and the other. And like I said, I really like, you know, slasher movies and things like that, that are fun, where you just like watching it for the body count and you just want to see how Jason's going to hack up the teenagers or whatever. That's fun too. But it's like, if I'm going to really be scared by a movie or disturbed by a movie, to be disturbed by a movie, you have to care about the people that are in it and you have to care what happens to them. Because if you're just like watching it and you don't give a shit about these people, then it's not going to scare you because you're not going to relate to them. You're not going to, like, you know, sympathize with their situation. So I do feel like some of that, you know, you do have to have some kind of buildup, and shit's not scary unless they show shit being normal first.
Yeah.
I mean, every horror writer knows that. You have to, like, horror comes from like deviation from normality, deviation from good. So you have to like establish that before you can deviate from it. And that's where the horror comes from. So, you know, I don't know. Somebody asked, in the cookbook, we should make our chosen last meal or death row meal and then make and eat it. That's actually a really good idea. I don't know if I could pick, like, if I knew, if I was on death row for whatever reason, and which I hope never happens.
Oh,
but yeah. And they said, well, this is the last thing you're ever going to eat before we fry you.
Steak and lobster.
Probably.
Steak and lobster, baked potato with sour cream and chives.
With my, you know what though? You know what would happen? And I don't know why I've randomly thought of this before, but I was thinking to myself, cause I think when I was like reading about some criminal and they were talking about the last shit they eat, I was like, you know what would happen? I would request like all this stuff that I couldn't afford to eat or, you know, everything. And I was like, oh, I don't have to worry about getting fat. I can have like cheesecake and all this other shit. And then like when it came time and they brought all of it, it's like I would have a stomach ache from nervousness from being executed and I wouldn't be able to eat it. I know that's what would happen.
John is talking about it. The first It was good. There was something about the second part wasn't quite as good as the first one.
Yeah, the second one, I liked it, but the first one was just so much more effective. Maybe, I guess, because the characters were kids. Yeah. So it was, I mean, the kids were a lot more, I guess you felt like a lot more sympathy toward them. And it seemed scarier because they were more scared.
I also liked Dr. Sleep, and that movie bombed.
Yeah.
Some people didn't like it. I liked it.
I liked it too.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, it wasn't my favorite that I saw that year, but it was actually like way, like much, much, much better than I was expecting.
Cool.
And actually, I'll tell you this right now, and I don't hardly ever say this, I liked it a lot better than the book. I didn't really like the book, I have to say. I can't really remember the last Stephen King book that I read that I really, really, really liked.
Yeah. Hey, Mango Badger. Yeah, this is three you got to see, man. Go on there and go watch Blood Machines. Go see Vivarium. That's on there too. That I think you have to get that off of Xbox.
Yeah, we rented that on Xbox.
And then
you can rent it on YouTube too as well.
Yeah, and then see Art of Self-Defense. You'll like all those.
Yeah, that one's not a horror movie, but
no, not a horror movie. But you'll
enjoy.
That's
like a dark.
You'll understand it. Yeah, it's pretty good.
But I mean, and as far as like other movies we've seen lately that aren't horror movies, I think Mope was probably one of my favorites.
Yeah, Mope was pretty good. Yeah.
I loved that movie because that was, like I said, that was just like, it was not just like Boogie Nights, but it was similar to Boogie Nights, and I fucking love Boogie Nights. But yeah, so you want to wrap it up?
Yeah, we can wrap it up.
All right, yeah, because like I said, yeah, so Sanders said, I love David Lynch. He lets characters sweep the floor for literally 5 minutes. I can deal with slow. Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, it depends on how you do it. And I'm not saying that there aren't movies that are like super slow and pretentious just for the sake of it, because there are. But a lot of times, you know, like what we were saying before, movies that are not told in a linear way, you know, sometimes people are doing that because they think they're being clever or whatever. But most of the time when filmmakers do that, they have a reason for doing that. You know what I mean? Like, because they're making a particular comment or they're trying to like make parallels between particular things going on or whatever. And speaking of nonlinear timelines, I'm going to try and finish up all three seasons of Dark this week. So, because I want to do a review on all of it this weekend sometime, like Saturday or Sunday. I'll probably do a live stream of that. No, we'll probably do a live stream tomorrow, but it might be a sidetracks unless I can find another new movie to watch tonight. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, so, oh, The Vast of Night. I still have to see that. Like, I've had that recommended to me a couple of times. So I'll get around to watching that. Actually, maybe, oh, thank you, Team Killer Cody.
That's right. Showing us them flashbulbs.
I actually, yeah, I think I've had that recommended to me a couple of times and I wrote it down. So maybe if I can find that to rent tonight, maybe I'll watch that tonight and I can review it tomorrow. We'll see how that goes. I think that's sci-fi, right?
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to wrap it up for today. We'll be back again tomorrow, either doing a sidetracks or a movie review. Thanks everybody for stopping by.
See you.
We'll talk to you again tomorrow.